Welcome to Alumni Live, the podcast. These are conversations with Grand Valley State University film and video graduates about the industry, the film video major, and alumni profiles.
Welcome to another episode of Alumni Live, the podcast. I'm your host, Randy Strobel, and today we're talking to the professors who helped make GVTV what it is today. We've got Kim Roberts, faculty advisor from 2000 to 2011. Hi, Kim.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. We've got Len O'Kelly, 2012 to 2018's faculty advisor. Len, thanks for all you've done.
Well, thank you, Randy. I'm glad to be part of this.
And James Ford, routing us out from 2018 to present. James, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Randy. Happy to be here.
All right. So let's talk about Grand Valley Television, Grand Valley Broadcast Network, as it was originally known. Kim, let's start with you in those early years. Who came to you? Did you go to somebody? Tell us about those early days of GVBN.
Jillian came to my office and said, "We're losing our advisor and we need to keep going." And I, of course, said, "Yes, yes, yes." Didn't really know what that meant because I had only, believe it or not, I was the advisor for the men's water polo. One of my students wanted to start a water polo club. And so I signed on to that. I'd never been to water polo, nor did I ever visit any. I just signed so they could get it done. And that was it. Some of the graduates that were on that team still contact me and tell me how proud they are of how this has kept going and how they've done well.
I did not expect when we got into this for the beginnings of Grand Valley Television to be water polo.
Well, I didn't do anything except sign a form, but GVTV, GVBN, was definitely different. And in those days, the student services had this gigantic, big open space in Kirkup. And every student group, there was like a little cubicle or a little wall between everybody. And then there were these big tables in the middle where you could spread out, make posters and do stuff like that. So all the student groups just had little cubicles. Well, you can imagine that didn't really do much for the student network. And they had this really clunky machinery that they were using. They would record it and put these big tapes inside there and try and broadcast it. It was very, very clunky. During my tenure at Grand Valley, there were many renovations, probably three, maybe four renovations to Kirchhoff while I was there. So I went to the head of student services and said, on this renovation, we need to get a studio for our television station. And he's like, yeah, okay. I said, well, we need a space where people could record. We can't be in this open cubicle with all these noisy students around. They need a place and they can't always go on location and go into their apartments, things like that. So he said, well, okay, I'll propose it. Then he came back and said, it's not going to happen. And I said, Bob, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to take no for an answer on this. I said it with a smile. He said, I thought you might say that. And I said, no, you have to go back and ask them again. Meanwhile, I don't know who the president was then. It wasn't Jillian. It was someone else. And she was just crying her eyes out. She was so disappointed. And I said, don't worry, we're not done. I'm going to keep advocating for it. And I had only asked for just a room. I said, just give us an oversized closet just so that they can at least record in there. And said, it doesn't seem like that much of an ask. So then months went by and he said, okay, we have carved out a space for you. And that is the current space. So, you know, we ended up with a studio and a control room. And I felt very, very proud of that. And then going to a lot of the budget meetings, we scored big time on getting just a baseline of cameras and tripods and microphones and lights. It was really, really great. So after that, they just seemed to really be able to take off. So that's what I contributed, as I'm not a broadcaster and I don't have the knowledge that Len and James have, and they have just taken it to a whole new dimension, which is awesome.
What I hear in that story is that moment of I won't take no for an answer. And, you know, when we talked to Jillian, she had that same tenacity. And it's just to do those things, you're going to be told no. And it's just what you do with that answer.
Well, yeah. And you don't have to be mean or angry about it. But I said, this is student services. This building is for student services. And you know how much use people are going to get out of a media studio? I don't even have to make that argument. You know how to make that argument. And then we ended up with probably four or five times the space that I had asked for.
Thank you so much. So I started in 2008 in that GVTV room, and it was still brand new and beautiful. I want to bring in Len and James here. So Kim handed off the baton to Len. What was that like? Was there an actual baton? And Len, where did you pick up in that story?
there is an actual baton, but I have to give a little bit of origin story before that. So I came to Grand Valley in 2009 to work for WGVU. There was a radio station that they had that I launched. And in 2010, I started advising the Whale Student Radio. And in 2011, I became an adjunct faculty member in the School of Communications. Right around the end of 2011, as I recall this, Kim was getting ready to go on sabbatical. And the call went out, does somebody want to advise GBTV? And I said, well, I would be interested in that. And I was pulled aside by one of the other faculty members who said, you know, you probably should let somebody else have a chance at doing something. I said, okay, I'll wait. And nobody was going to step up. That was pretty obvious to me. So I said, well, why don't we go have a meeting? So Kim stopped by my office and said, let's go over to the Office of Student Life and we'll walk this through. I said, okay, great. So we walk over and Michelle Golightly was still working in the Student Life office. And she's doing some things and we're talking about this. And Kim says, so you're good now. It's you, right? And I said, yeah, I'm all set. Now, when is your sabbatical over? And she said, well, no, now you're it. And I honestly did not know that I had agreed to become the permanent advisor. I thought I was just going to do it for a semester and then everything's going to go back to the way it was.
It does sound like me.
Again, not taking no for an answer. So I'm like, okay, I got a thing. So even before the baton is handed off, Kim says, by the way, the club is doing their pitch night tonight. Can you make it? I said, oh, I'll make it a point to go. So I go walking down to the studio and they were doing the pitch night in the studio. And I walk in and they said, hi, welcome. Are you here to pitch a show? Because they had no idea who I was. I said, no, actually, I'm your advisor. And they're like, oh, well, then come on in. And I got to meet everybody that night. But then it was at the next meeting was when Kim came to the meeting with the baton and kind of surprised me with it.
So I didn't go to pitch night. You were on your own?
I was on my own. I walked in and they thought I was there with a script or something.
Well, that's mean. I should have accompanied you there.
No, it was all good.
For our listeners, if you don't know what pitch night is, it's a night where you can pitch your own show or your own movie. Or whatever.
It was a big important thing and a lot of people came. What was nice about going to the event is I got to meet the whole club at once. And I'm trying to learn their names. I'm terrible at learning names, so it was good for me to get in.
So I guess I threw you in the deep end right away, and sorry about that.
That's how I like it. That's actually, I do better when I'm thrown in that way. So it was a great start.
Well, and it's so funny, too, that at that pitch night, they thought that you were pitching, because that is something that's so important from GVTV, is that anybody can pitch a show, and it doesn't have to be in the major. We had computer science people making shows, and they saw you, and they said, welcome, pitch your show. What's your idea?
It could be some old guy walking in who clearly doesn't go here, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But the next meeting that they had was when you came and explained to everybody that I was going to be the advisor and that you were going to be taking a leave of absence. And then you produced the baton maybe out of your bag.
I had to create one for that, right?
Yeah, it's an actual runner's baton with the GVTV logo on it. And I had it on my shelf in my office for the entire time I was the advisor. And then eventually when I handed off to James, I made sure that he got the baton. And the only modification I made to the baton was when we won our first MAB awards, I popped champagne at my house that night and I stuck the cork from the champagne bottle in the end of the baton.
I love it.
Technology-wise, the big thing I remember shortly after becoming the advisor was all of the equipment that actually broadcast the station was in this big, giant metal rack that lived up in the Student Life office. And we moved it down into the GVTV studio. And it just fit in the elevator with maybe a couple inches to spare, because that thing was a massive piece of equipment. And afterwards, I said, well, Bob, this is Bob Stolas. Bob, we got it moved. Sorry, we ripped the hell out of the carpet. And I just walked away. And we apparently had done a number on the elevator carpet getting it in there because it was not going to slide. And I said, sorry. And I haven't been in the studio in a while, but I think that thing is still there. And trust me, it is not going to move. Don't try moving that thing. It was not good. But we had some other things. We got some equipment, the ability to go live. I remember we went live from a campus life night. I think it was in 2013, maybe.
That was so exciting.
That was so much fun. Everybody was so geeked to be able to do that. And during my time there, what I remember the most about it was just so many shows. I mean, there was one semester, I think we must have had 13 or 14 shows in production. It was just madness trying to keep everything together, and nobody had enough equipment, and everybody was doing amazing things with very little. And I will never forget the enthusiasm of that club, just always trying to find ways to stretch themselves and make something out of almost literally nothing. And it was just a fun activity. And the only reason I stepped out was I became the associate director of the School of Comm in 2018. And I said, all right, something's got to give. And I don't really have a television background. I'm a radio person. And I looked over at James Ford and I said, hey, television broadcaster, have I got a job for you?
Yeah.
Well, and I sort of did the same thing Kim did and said, here, it's yours.
Incredible. James Ford, you have the baton currently. Len came to you, said, how about you are in charge of this organization? How did that go?
Well, I think it went pretty well. I think it's going pretty well. I can tell you that when we started off, it was one of those deals where I was just starting off as a tenure track after being a visitor for 4 years. And when you're in the tenure track mode, you really don't say no very much to things.
That's right.
So I said, yeah, why not? No, actually, the other thing is I've been in broadcast all my life, over 35 years. And one of the things that I found is so rewarding for me is to see young people get really excited about how to create. And I see it sometimes from students who don't have anything to do with broadcast. You know, it's one of those deals where they didn't know they were interested and they come to a club meeting and they try something. And I have multiple examples of this. I'm sure we all do over the years. And all of a sudden they create something and someone says, hey, you know, that was really good. And their eyes light up and now all of a sudden they're in, baby. They want more. And I think that part of it really attracted me. The other part that attracted me, frankly, was that Len did a pretty darn good job and it was rocking and rolling. So when I took over the first year, we did have 12 shows that were running all at once. Now, that might not seem like a lot, but 12 different shows for a student-produced television station was, as Len said, it was nuts in a really good way. Anyone who's a faculty advisor can tell you there's a learning curve, man. You first get in there and you're not really sure what's going on or what you're supposed to do, what your role should be, how much is overstepping and how much is not enough.
Not to mention that they meet at night when you're exhausted.
Not only do they meet at night, but there was this tradition of we'll meet until 10 or 10:30 and then we're all going out for fried cheese. I'm like, how do you people eat like this?
Yeah, and why do membership meetings have to happen at 9 p.m. on a Monday night?
Oh, I know. It's awful.
All right, so before we go down that road, I just want to say that the club was just rocking and rolling, and then COVID hit. We had such great momentum going and such intense involvement on the part of students, and then COVID hit, and for 2 years, we didn't know how to get together. Rules were changing constantly. We had to go through this whole thing with distancing the cameras. One time, we landed on like one person can be in the TV studio and one person can be in the control room. And it's not really easy to produce something when you only have one talent and one person working in the control room.
The acting's a little thin at that point.
Yes, and you better be very, very good if you're in front of the camera. So anyway, after the whole COVID thing, the last 2 or 3 years has been honestly rebuilding. Last year, though, we had some really, really intense, cool experiences with Grand Valley TV students, but also with a couple of area high schools that were in a program we call Grand Valley Student Reporting Labs. GVSRL is actually partnered with PBS Student Learning Labs. So it's a powerful grant-based kind of vibe that we had going, and that put us in area high schools. So here's the deal. We were able to get students from East Kentwood and from Wayland High School to come into the TV studio on a live election night stream. And my good friend Len O'Kelly was there to help produce, weren't you, Len?
Yeah, it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
But if you think about the most rewarding experience, the most intense experience of producing a half-hour live stream that went out nationally, we had probably close to 30 people in the TV studio.
Wow.
And by the time we got done with that, we're all just drenched in sweat. Everybody's clapping and everything else. It was just amazing.
That was a blast.
And I'll never forget, at the end of that night, we're cleaning up, celebrating, and one of the East Kentwood students steps up to me and she asks me, how do I do this? I got to do this. I mean, she absolutely had, you know, the passion now to get involved in broadcast. And I think just to wrap things up, that's really what Grand Valley TV is really all about. It's always been about that. It's about getting that extra experience for students outside the classroom where they can work their magic and not have a professor over their shoulder, but really meet people that they never would have met otherwise and create something amazing.
Yeah,
and taking those big swings is something I think that the organization in all the generations under Kim, Len, and James, like those big swings of, hey, we're going to do something that's never been done before, whether it's creating a TV station, doing a live broadcast, doing the Student Reporting Lab's live broadcast across the country. That is something that's so cool to be a part of. And James, hope you don't mind. I have to shout out my wife real quick. Mallory Patterson was the Student Reporting Lab's coordinator at WGBU. So yeah, you and she worked really hard to make that happen. And I love to hear that.
Yeah, she's great.
So I want to talk a little bit about this kind of balance between being a faculty advisor where you're trying to help the students, but not be on top of them the whole time, not looking over their shoulder, but they need guidance. How do you handle that as faculty advisors?
My rule was always, the beginning of every semester, I did this for both my radio students and my TV students, and I would tell them, I will defend anything you want to do. Just let me know first what it is you plan to do so that I can prepare my defense. Don't catch me off guard with anything. I think in the entire time, so I was with radio for 15 years and GBTV for six, I think maybe only once did I ever have to tell a student, I don't think that's a good idea. Any other time, I was like, let's find a way to make this happen. Let's find a way to do this. I remember one night the board had changed and a pitch night got particularly heated. The discussion about, do we pick up this show? Do we not pick up this show? And the students started a little battle with each other and tempers flared. And I remember one of them stormed off and I don't remember who it was, turned to me and said, all right, tell us what we did wrong. Because I was sitting there watching this. I said, I think you know what you did wrong. I don't think I need to explain that to you. They all came to me the next day to apologize for the way they acted. And I said, no, don't. This is part of the learning process. One of the things you have to learn in student media, as with anything in college, is how to work with other people. And I think you got a good lesson in that tonight. I don't know that, except for maybe one instance, and it was radio for what it's worth, it was not television, where I had to say, I don't think that's something that you should attempt to do. The students, I thought, were always very thoughtful, and they had their reasons, and they would make well-reasoned arguments. I mean, they would have to go before the Student Senate every year and ask for equipment, and I wasn't allowed in the room with them. They told me, you can't go into that meeting. The students are going to have to sink or swim on their own knowledge. And I remember one year they went in and said, well, we need money for our webpage. And a student senator said, you paid for the internet last year. And without missing a beat, one of our students said, do you know how the internet works? Because it's a subscription, you have to pay for it. So they were actually educating the Senate on their needs. And they always did such a great job advocating for themselves. I was always very proud of what they did every year. So I say you have to do it carefully, but there's always that balance too of, you know, I'm Len the professor, but I'm also Len the confidant. I'm Len the friend, Len the sounding board. You have to kind of balance all those roles when you're doing advising. It's a tricky balance. It really is.
Kim, I know from experience, you were so good at that balance. What were some of your theories of how to do that with students?
I came from two private art colleges, and so there wasn't a lot of censorship in my bones. But much like Len just mentioned, my concern was always that they respect each other and they respect the equipment. You own this equipment. You have to treat it well. You have to treat other people well. So I said, you're never going to get trouble from me on content, but you will hear from me if there's a problem or breakdown in any of those two areas. And the space, once we got the space too, they needed to respect that space. In fact, one time I did go down there and saw so many candy wrappers and junk and garbage all over the floor. And that upset me a lot. And so I called everybody in to clean it up and to tell them, you got to respect this space. You got to leave it better than you found it for the next crew. And I teach my students that when they go on location, if someone is gracious enough to give you a space to create, you need to leave that space better than you found it. Even if it's just putting a thank you note on the table or putting a flower, something just to say thank you for the space. And those are the things that I remember watching over and trying to help them navigate that. But, you know, if there were some sensitive scenes that they were wanting to do, I would let them know that I would help them to figure out how to shoot them and still have integrity between the actors and not have any kind of fallout from that. But I taught film and video art, and oh my gosh, the things that they created in there. I remember some of those pieces went on GRTV, Community Media Center, and all hell broke loose. One of my friends said, can you give me all your projects from film video art? And I said, sure. And I asked the students, does anyone have a problem if these go on GRTV? And they said, oh, no. So then my friend calls and said, are there penises smoking cigars in one of your projects? I said, oh, let me think. Yeah, I do remember something about that. And she said, seriously, you don't remember that? And I said, no, I came from the Art Institute of Chicago. Like, these are not things that shock me. And she said, well, all the church ladies in town are having a fit about this. So I wasn't very shockable. And I told them that. I said, you're never going to shock me.
I feel like we always had the green light to experiment. At GVTD, that's such a safe place to try things. And, you know, there's not a $1 million budget on the line. We can just get in there and take a shot at something. James, you've had to balance a lot, especially as you talked about navigating COVID. How do you find that balance between helping the students, letting them figure stuff out for themselves? What has been your direction in that?
Well, boy, it is really hard to follow Kim and Len. You put me in a bad spot here, Randy, because those guys, woo, they are good. They are very, very good. Great stories. This is really an entertaining podcast to be a part of and to listen to all at one time. So to answer your question, it's interesting because there's been years, especially in the beginning, where I think I poured myself into it too much to the point where I was almost micromanaging students. And I think while that's good for a while to kind of get them in the right direction, I had to tell myself, I got to back off here a little bit. They need to be more in control of what's going on. And then we got into the COVID era, and that was tough to balance. But we had some students who really had the confidence of leadership, and they really thought that they're going to be a station manager who's going to make a difference. And so I said, okay, I'll set you on the right path. I'll do those workshops when you want me to come in, those periodic workshops. I will come to your meetings in the e-board, have a little chat with them, set out some script show templates for you, be at the pitch nights. Okay, yeah, sounds good, but I think we got things from here. And then it would just sort of drift off. They'd be going okay for a while, and then it'd just drift off a little more. And so I had to kind of come back around. So I just really discovered that after letting that happen, you cannot just step back. A little of that's okay, but then you have to keep checking in. You find out that just like young kids, students in our college, don't always tell you what they really mean.
Yes.
They don't really tell you what's going on. So it was a learning curve, really, to answer your question. And I think I'm still looking for that right balance. I tend towards being much more involved in things. And here's a take-home message for you. It's so difficult to find young people who are both willing and able to be really good leaders. It's just a hard thing to find. And we should do better, I think, at finding ways to encourage and develop leaders, young leaders. Because when I see that person who is really the leader who can take control of a student organization and bring it to the next level, I am just in awe because you just don't see it that much. We have to do better at trying to develop leaders. But now that we're kind of on the mend here from COVID and we're developing again, after a really rough recruitment year coming back, we only had 3 students that were returning from Grand Valley at our first meeting. And we were like, oh man, this is not good. So we had to do some intense work, and we got ourselves up now to almost 50 students in the club, with 28 of them actively involved in producing shows as early as next week. So we're doing well, and it's a credit to the 4 e-board members who have worked harder than any other e-board members I've seen since I've been there, because they had to, really, and they realized that. And they are good leaders. We've got some wonderful students. So maybe that's the exclamation point eventually here at the end of this, is that all of the hard work that everyone has done, Kim and Len and others who have worked for GVTV, it is really poised to be incredibly successful here in the coming months and year, I think.
Hey, it's Randy. We're taking a short break to tell you about the Morse Cuppy Film, Video, and Animation Study Abroad Endowed Scholarship. The scholarship was established by Bill Cuppy with support from Deanna Morse to help film, video, and animation students with the cost of studying abroad. Alumnus Bill Cuppy talks about why he started the scholarship.
We created this scholarship because experiencing the world and other cultures has been life-changing for us, and we wanted students to have a similar experience during this pivotal time in their lives.
Caroline Hamilton, the 2024 recipient of that scholarship, describes the benefits of the support she received.
I'm a film video major, and I have a German minor. I've been studying German for about 8 years now, and so I decided to study abroad this past summer in Germany. It definitely challenged me as a person. I had to figure out how to do things and communicate and just put me out of my comfort zone. It introduces you to new things that you'd be afraid to experience because you don't want to embarrass yourself, but you have to just go for it. The scholarship itself, just the almost permission to be like, yes, go experience this, go learn, go see what happens, how this changes how you see the world and how you approach your work. It took the pressure off of me a little bit to just be like, I can experience this and not have to worry about everything else going on. I can just go enjoy my time there and see what I can learn and grow from.
For more information and to donate to the scholarship, visit the link in the description. Now back to the show.
Yeah, I want to go back to your comment about leadership. I totally agree with you that it is important for us to work to build leadership and lead leaders. At the same time, I think it's really important for us to build followers. People, a lot of times, have their own ideas and they want to execute those ideas, but are not necessarily in a position to do so. So they need to really have the discipline and the attitude that they can follow a leader. So I think that's really hard to do sometimes. And it's hard to let other people lead and for you to be a strong follower, because every leader needs a follower, right? I mean, we need to have these people that are strong supporters of a project. So not everyone can be the leader, but everyone can respect that leader and work with that leader to make things really churn in a good way.
And we've heard a lot of stories from students who talked about how GVTV was a space for them to try to find where they fit in crews, and stories of people who came in to Grand Valley thinking they were going to direct and they actually figured out, hey, I really like lighting or I really like editing. And a lot of that is GVTV, again, is this place to experiment and to try out who you are in a crew or a leader or a follower or lighting or whatever it is. Len, do you have ideas about this leadership and developing leaders, followers, different types of roles?
There was a book that we did several years ago, a group of us around the country on college media, and the chapter that I wrote was a case study. It was while I was advising both radio and television, and I sat down with a lot of our students on both sides, and everything that's been said so far was echoed. It was students saying, we love the opportunity to become leaders. At the same time, we really don't know what we don't know, and we really need a strong role model to kind of point us in the right direction. And I was fortunate to have some really, really good club presidents the whole time I was there. It's the fun of student media is you get a new group usually every year to, let's see how this group is going to work. But there was always this sort of, can you show me some tips and tricks for how to do this? And if I have to look back and say, well, what are you most proud of? Watching students who didn't know they could take on those responsibilities. And I don't mean necessarily leading the whole club, but running their corner of the club. Like if they were a human resources person who dealt with keeping all the people in line and all of the tech directors who would go through and say, I just want to make sure the equipment is still working. And they got in charge of that area and made that area hum. They weren't necessarily running the whole club, but they had a very vital function to play. And what I saw over the years is to be a successful member of a board, you had to be both a leader and a follower. At the same time, you had to have both of those roles mastered.
You learned those roles, and that's what helped you become a leader.
Exactly. And the ones that were the best at it were the ones who knew when to step forward and when to go along and follow direction. And that is not an easy skill. I say this now as a department chair. It is hard to get faculty to do this. They all have ideas for what they want to do. Kim, you were a chair. You know all well how it can be.
I struggled the whole time I was at Grand Valley. I never enjoyed being the follower so much, but I always was up to the task of supporting the bigger goal. So that by the time I became a leader, I was very familiar with all the nuances or most of the nuances of how it feels to not be heard or get assigned something that you really didn't want to do and you still want the project to come into fruition. So like you're saying, you have to do all those things in order to become a leader.
As an advisor, I just took from my time being management and broadcasting, which I did for the better part of 15 years. I ran radio stations. If I wasn't in charge, I was second in charge in markets as big as Chicago. It's the exact same running a 50,000-watt radio station in Chicago and running a student television station in Allendale. Really, there's a lot of similarities in the way those are managed and run. And I just wanted to bring those experiences in and make it as real as I could for everybody who was part of it.
I think in my case, I have a broadcast background, so being in a broadcast studio is just like home to me. One thing that you do find is that regardless of what your experience is, it's really more about having the desire to really help students. It's really about caring enough to see where their students are at and where you can step in and help them. And obviously having broadcast experience, professional experience really helps that. But I think it starts with having the desire to help students and getting to know them on a more personal level than you would, say, in an academic classroom. in terms of my broadcast experience and then also having students from other majors, like even film and video, there is a little bit of a difference there because a lot of film students, they're very talented. They're hungry to go produce things and be creative, but they mostly want to take the equipment out of the studio and go into the field and shoot on location. And then they'll come back and they'll do their post. Whereas in broadcast, really, it's the other way around. You're going to shoot everything live or live on tape, live on disc, or you're going to stream it right from the studio. And when you're done, baby, you are done. And that's nice to be able to finish that. But those are two different processes. So it's been a little bit of a learning curve. You never stop learning in this business. And I learned a lot about where the film students were in relation to the broadcast students and learned to be as equitable as I could among everyone and really encouraging them to still get involved in each other's types of productions. Like, don't just be a film field shooter. Try studio production. And then likewise, the studio production people really wanted them to get out their field with the film people and try some of that. And that's where you start encountering some really unique relationships and you get to know people that aren't even in your major, but they share your passion for filmmaking or for producing video. But it's exciting when I start talking about applying what I know, just like we all do, to something we love.
Yeah, well, and I think that, you know, from 2000 to 2025 on this call and such different backgrounds, and yet the organization had the same ethos. Yeah, like James, you're talking about your television broadcast background, Lens Video, Kim, your Art Institute background.
Yeah, so a lot of the work that I did both as an undergrad and a graduate student was really about my own personal passion projects. So this whole idea of being part of a crew and being part of a team was not something that I did at all. I was an independent video artist. And so I was always fascinated by the creative content development. How do we get from here to there? I couldn't even begin to imagine doing a live broadcast. I would be a wreck. I mean, that isn't something that I could have ever thought about doing because everything would have to be so much more developed and perfect and thought through, right? This whole idea of spontaneity or leaving anything to chance would just terrify me. Any kind of broadcasting just wasn't in my wheelhouse at all. So I really didn't focus on it. I focused on things I could do, which was advocate for space and advocate creativity and to allow for that to develop. So I loved being in for my office hours. Students would come in from GBTV and say, oh, we have this idea. And then we just go crazy. Sometimes we just blow out the pizza. Like, I can get out here. Let's just go over to Pino's and get a pizza and let's talk this through. Those are the things that I really love doing is the concept of letting them throw ideas out and then seeing where it all led. You know, I'd like to just ask questions like, then what? You know, those are the memories that I really enjoy.
Some of my best memories are some of those Pino's jam sessions where we were figuring out ideas. Like, you really did teach us, like, here's a framework on how to think through creative ideas. And, you know, I still use that today in my professional life.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Len, do you have any stories about how your background has helped you as a faculty advisor?
The only other thing I'd add is one of the things that I always tried to impart when I was running the show was reminding everybody that we're all working towards the same goal, and that made us necessarily a little more equal. During the time I was the advisor at GBTV, I went from adjunct to visiting professor. So I was in the classroom a lot more after that. And I remember the first day of class, I forget what class it was I was teaching, but there were a lot of GBTV people that were in that class. And we get to the first class and I say, does anybody have any questions? And one of them just stopped and said, I don't know how to address you. And I said, I'm sorry. He said, well, you kind of make it very clear in the club that you're one of us. And I'm like, well, I am one of you in the club. Here, it's a little different. But I wanted everybody to understand. And that came directly from my time in radio. I was fortunate in many ways to sort of be the Forrest Gump of radio, in that I was in situations in radio stations with people I had no business being on air staffs with. Like, four of the people I worked with are in the National Radio Hall of Fame. Like, I do not belong on that list. These were people who were legendary performers. And what I took away from each and every one of them was how accessible they were. I started a job once in Chicago. I was coming in as the assistant program director. So I was number two in charge of the department. And this legendary Hall of Fame broadcaster appeared in my office door the next Monday and very calmly stuck out his hand and said, hi, I wanted to introduce myself. I do the morning show. This was a guy I grew up listening to with a radio under my pillow when I was 5 years old. I'm like, I know damn well who you are. But he did not come in with the ego. And that stayed with me. Leave the egos at the door. And that was something I always tried to impart. These people who are very famous people can work together and do this. Then certainly those of us on a college campus can do it. And I always tried to make it a very egalitarian approach. And I think that is something that I took from being in the pros as long as I was.
I really saw that in my time there as a goal that we had, although we didn't always reach that. You know, sometimes our egos weren't checked at the door, and there were some conflicts that the faculty advisors had to help us out with. Could you talk a little bit about mediating some conflicts, or if there are multiple leaders happening? What is a faculty advisor's role in a club like GVTV and figuring out how to mediate some of that?
One model that I did change was e-boards used to be elected, and it was sort of like the people would pick the ones they wanted in different roles. And what I noticed was happening was people that were popular were being selected, but they might not have been going into the right job for them. Kim left me an amazingly great organization compared to what I got when I got student radio. Student radio, well, the first thing I had to do, well, there were two students who were there who weren't even students, and I had to evict them. Like, you don't go here, you can't be here. It was a mess. But the big thing I noticed was that six people on e-board had the title manager, and they did not know who answered to who. So I said, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to put a little structure in. And I tried something with radio where I said, we're going to pick a station manager, and then I want the manager to go through and hire the e-board with the understanding that you are now responsible for the performance of these people. So don't just put your friends in there, because they're going to have to deliver. And the second year I was over at GBTV, I said, let's try this. And what ended up happening was people did a little application process. Here's the job I am most interested in. And what I found is we were getting people in roles who were genuinely passionate. Like, the tech people wanted to be tech people. Everybody knew what their role was supposed to be. And the thing I noticed is we eliminated a lot of that conflict that you're describing. I really didn't have to deal with it much, because the group sort of policed itself. It was a very fortunate circumstance. I don't even think there was an instance where we had to remove any board member. People just knew to work together. And I do remember one year, it was the last meeting of the year, and the new e-board had just been selected. And they came up to me and they said, hey, good news, we're all getting an apartment together in the fall. And I said, hey, that is the worst idea I've ever heard. And they were like, we thought you'd be excited. I said, no, I did that when I was in college. I know how this is going to end. And sure enough, about a month into that fall, I had the students come to my office. Will you talk to so-and-so? Nope, they're your roommate, man. You dug yourself a hole here. I am not getting involved in this, right? I used to tell students when I would do academic advising, I don't get involved in the money. And when I would be in media advising, I'd say, I don't get involved in the roommates or girlfriends or boyfriends. That's your own thing. I am not getting into this drama.
Oh, that was my favorite part. I love that. I matchmaked all the time.
You have more the temperament for it than me, Kim.
I did. I sent people up on dates, and I'm terrible. I think it's good that I'm gone now, because I'm not of this age anymore, because things were way looser when I was around.
Oh, they're still pretty loose. I mean, we still have a good, it's still pretty loose.
James, these ideas of mediating conflicts as a faculty advisor, is that something you've had to deal with as you're rebuilding after COVID?
Thankfully, no, I've really not. But the organization that was passed on to me from Len was in great shape. And I think one of the things that really helps a lot, and that people would probably roll their eyes at, but still having a student handbook that was up to date and everybody had to read and even sign it to acknowledge the fact that you were going to abide by these rules. I know, as crazy as that sounded, it actually works. And we really haven't had students have any kind of major conflicts. There's been a few things that have happened in-house, a few misunderstandings where I had to step in. The only thing that we have experienced has been sort of on the negative side of things is carelessness with equipment sometimes. I remember a story, it was just a heartbreaking story. Just as I took over, it was probably 2019 going into the 2020 COVID year, and we had just purchased three new Canon 90Ds, which at that time was state of the art. Those were great cameras, and bought some really nice lenses that were a lot of money. And I'll never forget the very first time one of the students who happened to also be an e-board member took out the camera. He was on 48th to Lake Michigan Drive. And he turned and he thought out of the corner of his eye, he saw something fall off the back of his trunk. He had forgotten to put the bag inside the car. It was on the top of the car in the back, and he couldn't see it until it flew off. And he looked back in horror just in time to see a car roll right over the lens and smash the camera.
Oh, wow.
And he came to me shaking. I mean, this poor guy was just so upset. And so we had to work through that one. And that was quite a deal because, you know, you want to be able to say, hey, hey, it's okay. But on the other hand, it's not okay. And we have to talk about reparations for this and blah, blah, blah. So we got through it. That was fairly intense. But you can't believe how careful everybody was with the camera equipment.
Props to the student, though, for not just shoving it in a cabinet, pretending like, I don't know how this happened. I mean, they owned it.
He did the right thing, that's for sure.
Kim, did you want to talk at all about some of the strategies or the ways that you helped mediate conflict in GVTV?
I think it's been so long, and I don't carry a lot of that stuff with me, so I don't remember anything. There's just little things that would come up, but they were always really good about coming to my office and saying, I'm just really struggling, and then I try to get two people in the room, and we say, what's your point? What's your point? And can you see their point? Can you see their point? Just kind of work those things out. I don't remember any really big drama situations.
Yeah.
One of the things I really wanted to make sure to mention, especially if anyone's listening and thinking about joining GVTV, I'm Facebook friends with a lot of former students. So the cool thing about this is that that's many, many years ago that I was the advisor. And I still watch their lives. They're having children. They're getting married. They're doing all kinds of things in their careers and all of that. And I just love watching all that. But what I love is that when they post something on Facebook, all these people, all these names come up where there's all these likes and hearts. They have remained lifelong friends. The friendships that are developed at GVTV are like none other because over 4 years or 3 years, whenever you join GVTV, those people really grow together. And those friendships have lasted a lifetime. And it warms my heart whenever I see all these people liking the comments and the updates and things like that.
I'll second that too, because I'm probably not as well connected as Kim is, but I have the same sort of thing where I see the posts from the alums and I have the added experience of the fact that GVTV caused me to become an ordained minister because I married two of the alums at their request.
It's so beautiful. I love that, Lynn.
And that was in 2018, I believe, right as I was stepping out of the club. And one of the things that was neat about Mackenzie and Aaron's wedding was it was also a GVTV reunion. They all got together and it was just so good to see everybody. It had been years since I'd seen them in some cases. You know, some of the folks were from my first year in 2012 and they had graduated and I hadn't seen them since. And it's just an amazing connection from that. So you do become part of their lives and it continues and continues. And I think I just did my sixth wedding this summer. So yeah, now I'm still doing this now. So it's like, oh, this is fantastic.
Good for you. It's cool.
They are truly lifelong bonds. As we're wrapping up here, I do want to think about how you talk about GVTV as a benefit to the university, to students. You know, if you're talking to parents, how is GVTV an asset to a student that would be a part of it?
What I tell students is this. If you want to be really successful in the journalism, broadcasting, and digital media major, or film and video, or whatever you're in, if you really want to be successful at whatever you do, you can't just go through school like everybody else is and go to all the classes and work as hard as you can, because everybody else is going to do that. You get involved in student media and you are instantly positioning yourself for success when you graduate. And the reason why is because you're getting experience. You're building that portfolio. You're networking with people who are potentially going to be your professional peers. So all of that taken together is a powerful case for joining student media in general and GVTV in particular.
I mean, they're failing forward, right? When they fail, they're learning. It's so beautiful. You're right on, James.
I've told parents when I've met with prospective students my own story, and that is I am a product of student media. Had it not been for my ability to be doing radio productions and television productions as a student 30 years ago, I never would have gone that way. I was a pre-med major when I went to college. I had to sit my parents down after 2 weeks when I realized I am going the wrong path. I had to sit them down and say, look, I am not going to be a doctor. I am going to do this instead. I feel as though I am pulled to do this. And believe me, they were not thrilled at first, but eventually they came around on that. Had it not been for those experiences I had outside of the classroom where there was no grade attached, like Kim said, you fail forward and you take those chances and it's from those experiences you get better and better and better. Had I not had those experiences, I wouldn't have been able to have the career I did, which then led to me being able to teach students. So I just stress the vital importance.
I just got to say this, Lynn.
With a voice like yours,
you were born to be in broadcast. But had you ever been my doctor, giving me really bad news with that voice would have been very comforting. Your voice was meant to be
heard.
I'm glad you went into broadcasting, but I could see you as a doctor with beautiful bedside manner, so that wouldn't have been so bad either.
Kim, we have your test results.
How cool is that?
But I do mean that. That's how I sell not just of GVTV, but student media anywhere. It is such a vital experience to get while you're in college. And, you know, frankly, students have paid for it, right? So take advantage of everything you've paid for when you're a student. It's there for you. Use it.
You are so right.
Kim, did you have anything to add on that before I wrap up with our last question here?
Just do it. You will never regret it. It will serve you for the rest of your life.
Literally got my job in broadcasting because I had GVTV shows on my resume. And they said, you did all of this and at the time I was a sophomore. And I was like, yep. But all right. So GVTV coming up on 20 years. Looking forward to the next 20 years. What do you want to see for the next 20 years? And what do you want students to carry forward?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say James is really looking forward to passing that baton on to a person looking for his or her tenure. James, how off am I there?
Would I like to see somebody take on this wonderful opportunity and move it forward? Yes. I think here's the other thing to think about as we're talking about where we want to be in the future is that just like the e-board and the leadership changes every year, I think periodically it is a good thing for faculty to move from one area of interest that they dedicate themselves to and see growth in, and then go to another one to continue their own development.
And GVTV has been all about growth, whether we're talking about the students and you're talking about faculty. I think growth is the organization.
I did mean that really genuinely. I know it sounds funny. Yeah, let's get rid of this baton. But truly, it is a gift. When you hand that baton to the next faculty, it is a gift to that faculty and to the students.
And everybody brings a little something different to it. That's the beauty of the whole thing.
Well, I've really learned that in this conversation. Each of the three of you have added a lot.
For myself, where would I like to see GVTV? I would love to see it continue to grow. A couple of specific areas. I would like to see GVTV grow into regular studio production that happens every single day. And I don't think we're really that far away from it. We've got the right crew and definitely the right equipment. We are definitely positioned to do a lot of studio type production. And now we've also acquired a mobile unit. So we got a grant from the Grand Rapids College Channel folks, and we were able to purchase equipment and then acquire a brand new trailer. Now we're in the process of putting that all together. In fact, I have a meeting on Wednesday with Bill Cuppy to check out his mobile unit. We're going to pattern this after that because one of the things that students would like to do is sports. And so there's all of this opportunity of collaborating with other club sports and actually being their live sports channel. So that's something exciting that I'd like to see us go into. And then the last thing is I really want us to get more into doing that live streaming, do some events that are live and maybe partner with the Whale so we could do some simulcasts and things like that. So in short, those are some of the things that I'd like to see us do.
Len, what are you looking forward to in the next 20 years?
Any media outlet that survives in the current climate is doing something right. I have been fortunate enough to serve on some national boards in college media. And for the College Media Association, I was the chair of the broadcast committee for 4 or 5 years. And the number of universities that have had to fold their media outlets as they have to make a cut here and a cut there is really staggering. So my first wish is that it actually be here. And if it does that, it is done well. The other thing I would say would be important would be engaging with the alums. Just from alums that I do hear from, I know they want to be a part and see what's going on. I was very fortunate 2 years ago to go back to my undergrad's radio reunion. It was our 50th for that radio station. And people came from all over the country for it. And the current students were sitting there just wanting to hear the stories. And we wanted to hear their stories. We were more interested in like, what's it like now? I mean, for me, like, how do you even do this with the way it is now? We were all just fascinated to hear. I know there's a lot of alums that would, first of all, they want to see it do well and they want to see it prosper. Those are also the connections that the current students can have for, you know, what are they going to do when this is all done? There are probably some alums who wouldn't mind hiring some fresh alums to work on a project here and there. And I think that's an amazing networking opportunity that I'd love to see continue to grow as we go forward.
All right, Kim, take us home. Last words here. What do you want to see in the future? What are you happy that you've seen?
Well, James, you have me so pumped with what's happening there. I'd like to see GVTV serve the community more. One of the things about Grand Rapids that is so special is that there are so many volunteers. I mean, it's one of the highest rated in terms of volunteerism. One of the things that I always have loved is the alternative spring break at Grand Valley, where people volunteer their time across the country and do things and go these places. I'd really love to see that be a goal, that you pick about four or five or so of these alternative spring breaks, and they're so reporting on the generosity of our students and how they're serving the community, how they're serving the country, maybe even the world if they go even further. But also, there's just so much opportunity just within the Grand Rapids community just to show how valuable Grand Valley is to the community, how important it is to Michigan, how important Grand Valley is to the country. So I'd like to see more of what James is talking about, where we take these trucks and we record these beautiful stories of our students helping and also people in the community helping. I would just love to put more focus on how important media is to the community, and Grand Valley is there. Grand Valley's everywhere, so let's show it. That's our job. Yeah.
Couldn't have said it any better. Thank you so much, Kim, Len, and James. And before we all sign off here, I just really want to say thank you for setting this all up and giving us this laboratory of creativity where we can not only experiment like we do in class, but we can experiment with bureaucracy and we can try out new things and creating something new every day. And it's something that will live on in ways that maybe classwork doesn't always. So just thank you for all the work you've put in, all those late nights starting at 9 p.m. I really appreciate all the work the three of you put in. And I know on behalf of all of Grand Valley students and alumni, thank you for Grand Valley Television.
It was an honor to be a part of this history.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Alumni Live, the podcast. Subscribe to our podcast to hear more from our alumni across the industry. Check out Alumni Live on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for more conversations and networking. Let us know what topics you want to hear our alumni talk about. The Grand Valley State University Film Video Alumni Network is here for you, and we're glad that you're here. Thank you for listening.